In this week's parsha, which my original title for the shiur was going to be Two Funerals and a Wedding, but instead we decided to go in this direction. But that's really what the shiur is about. There are two funerals and there's a wedding in between. But what's really important about this is something which may be a little bit subtle and may be very easy to miss. And that is that both of the issues, especially the first funeral and the wedding that take place, they have a common denominator. And by the way, there's more than one common denominator. But there's a common denominator that Avraham has a very hard time finding a place, an appropriate place, purchasing a place that he can bury Sarah. Second, Yitzchak has a hard time. Again, there's proxy going on over here between his father and the Eved, but finding a wife. So what's the common denominator on both of those issues? It's something which we know in the back of our minds, but we don't always think about appropriately. So let's go. We're going to start with the sources. I'll open them up. And I'm skipping the first source for now, and I'm going straight to the second one. Vayomer l'Avram, and God said to Avram, or Avram, Yodea teda ki geria zar'acha be'eretz lo lahem va'avadum v'inu otam abar ma'ot shana. And you should know that your children will be strangers in a land which is not theirs, and they will be enslaved and they'll be abused. Notice where the etnachta is on the otam, abar mot shana. The abar mot shana, just the way the sentence structure is built, and you're going to have to trust me on this one, does not necessarily go on every single element in there. In fact, it more likely than that goes on the first part of the verse, and that's certainly the way that God chose to interpret it. Your children will be a stranger in a land which isn't theirs, and that's the 400 years, but when it comes to the slavery and the abuse, that God decided would be less than 400 years. Now, why is all this significant? Because we understand from Chazal, and I'm going to say it's just shot in the pasuk as well, but we understand from Chazal that the 400 years begin with the birth of Yitzchak. So it could be at that point we didn't notice it, because we're so focused on the servitude and we're so focused on the abuse that we don't notice the other part of it. Now the other part of it is that you'll be strangers in a land which isn't yours. What we don't notice sometimes is that this land will become theirs, which means, which land are we talking about? We're talking about different lands, but one of the lands is the land of Israel. The land of Israel will become their land. So you're going to be a stranger in a land which isn't yours. Now just think about this week's parsha, those two elements. One, you're going to have a hard time finding a place to bury your wife, because even though God promises to Avram you're going to inherit it, at this point all that he has is the promise, which means the promise is focused on the future. As of right now, it's not his. Second, that Yitzchak can't just go, and I can be a little facetious, he can't go to the local bar or pub or well for that matter, because this is, you know, Bereshit, and that's the place to find people from the other genders. You find them by the wells. And he can't. He can't do any of those things because, again, they are strangers in a land which isn't theirs, even though it will become theirs. That's really what the issue is, that we don't notice sometimes. So therefore, to find a wife, have to go far off to find a wife. In order to be able to bury Avram, to bury his wife, that's something which is really quite difficult. So that's what I'm pointing out over here, that the two elements of this parsha actually are connected, because that's the common denominator, namely that land is still not theirs. Now, when Avram calls in his Eved, and let's just go with Chazal. Chazal used one of our favorite principles. They use the principle of the conservation of characters. And being that we know on other occasions this man's name will be Eliezer, so therefore we assume that this is Eliezer now as well. I'm actually going to try to show along the way that it is Eliezer, and I'm going to try to show it in a way which probably you don't anticipate, but I'm going to show that even if his name isn't Eliezer, this is indeed Eliezer. And I'll explain my point when we get there, but for right now, we have Avram calls in his servant and says, listen, you have to go, and he tells him really pretty specifically where he needs to go, and it's worthwhile for us just to think about this a little bit, and why? Why do you have to go travel so far? Why isn't there somebody? Or I'll put it the other way around. Are there any other candidates? Are there any other candidates, even according to the criteria that Avram is looking for? Maybe there is somebody else that could have been chosen. That's part of what we're going to try to figure out today. Part of also what I want to do is to understand who the characters could be, or who the, let's put it this way, who the candidates could be, and what the issues may be involved. Okay, so let's start with Eliezer himself, or the Eved himself, and assuming that for now that the Eved is in fact Eliezer. So let's just start looking at the verses, and then we'll weave a little bit of Chazal in as well. Va'avram zaken babi yamim v'ashem beirach et Avram bakol. Avram is blessed with everything. Va'yomar Avram el avdo zakan beito hamoshel b'chol asher lo. And he actually realized it would have been easier to say the man's name. It actually seems to be going out of the way not to say his name, and that's going to be really appropriate for this chapter, because this chapter is impossibly long. It goes on for 67 verses, and you know, whenever I try to judge these things, I think what my editor or editors would have done to me, and they would have said, you're repetitive, you could save words, your sentences are too long, things don't, not everything here needs to be said. I mean, actually, if you think about it, this could have been reduced to, and Yitzchak married Rivka, and that's it. That could have been the whole thing, and that would have made the parsha a lot shorter. And that's part of what we need to consider as well. Why is there so much? And even over here, by avoiding his name, there seems to be a lot of information. He says two things. One is, he makes him square, Lo tikach isha livni b'bino takna'ani, asher anochi yoshev b'kirbo. Don't take somebody's local, because again, this is the issue of being a stranger. I am not part of this land, right? Don't find somebody who's local. Ki el artzi be'el moladati telech. Rather, I want you to go to the land that I am from, my birthplace. Belakachti isha livni liyitzchak, and I want you to go there. By the way, this is one of the things. There are a number that he was not necessarily precise, but let's go a little bit further. When Vayomer Lav Avraham, Yishmer Pen Teshivat B'Nishama, don't take him back there. Hashem Elokei Hashamayim, Asher Lakachani Mi Beit Avi, Mi Eretz Moladeti, Asher Diber Li, Asher Nishbar Li Lemar, Lezarcha Tena Ta'aretz Hazot, which means, again, Avram is very conscious of this point. This land will be yours. God took me out of that land. He says, Hu Yishlach Malacho Lefanecha. He's going to send, now you can decide if this is a messenger, an emissary, or an angel. And Lakachta Isha Levni Misham. And that's where you're to go to bring the wife. Later on, he tells him again. Okay, let's leave it at that. The Eved will start. One of the things we need to think about is something which Chazal tell us, and that is that Eliezer had some kind of a hesitation in this, and it's part of what I want to read when we look at his behavior. He has a hesitation, and his hesitation is, essentially, like any father who's got a daughter of marriageable age, I say, listen, I know a nice girl. I know somebody that, you know, could be good. And I'm going to embellish this a little bit simply because Chazal do. I'm just putting some pieces together. Chazal tell us something remarkable about this Eliezer. Now, again, his name was mentioned previously. It was mentioned when Avram went to war. And it talks about Damascus Eliezer there as well. It talks about the 318 people. There Rashi says, oh, that's Eliezer. Now, why would they imagine that Eliezer was so strong and so powerful? And the answer is something we find at least in the Targum Yonatan, or the ascribed Targum Yonatan, the pseudo-Targum Yonatan, who tells us that this man Eliezer is actually the son of Nimrod. Now, for those of you who never heard this, this is shocking. Because Avraham faces Nimrod, and Nimrod takes Avram and throws him in the furnace. Avram walks out of the furnace and walks away and was Makariv his son, and his son joins him as they continue on. And his right-hand man becomes Nimrod. And by the way, I'm going to say this is Nimrod's son, or a type of a Nimrod. Now, that's remarkable, because that would make Eliezer one of the great Balei Tshuva. And by the way, there is a midrash that says Eliezer goes straight into Olam Haba and never dies, and he's one of the people that never died in this world. And there are midrashim that think of him in such a positive way. So can you imagine the path that he's taken? He's gone from being somebody who is, initially he's the son of Avraham's enemy, and he joins Avraham, he's with him all these years, and he's essentially Avraham's muscle, and he's there to protect him, he's there to take care of him. And when Avraham needs somebody who he trusts more than anyone else to go off on this mission, this is the one that he sends. But Eliezer, according to at least one Midrash, if you want, we can look at it, takes a deep breath and essentially says, listen, you know, I have a daughter. Why do you have to go so far? And the answer that he gets is not all that nice, because Nimrod comes from the family of Cham, and Cham are the people who make all the trouble in Sefer Bereishit, which is very, very disturbing, because why couldn't he do tshuva? Why couldn't he go through a gear? Why couldn't he have changed? Why couldn't he? But Avraham does not accept this. And at least that's what the Midrash paints for us. So therefore, at least a part of this Eved, if it is Eliezer, and if Eliezer, even if he's not Nimrod, that doesn't make a difference, or it's son of Nimrod, that doesn't make so much a difference. By the way, I'll also mention parenthetically that the same Targum Yonatan also claims that Hagar is the daughter of Paro, that we know, who in turn is the son of Nimrod. So essentially, Sarah's right-hand woman is a granddaughter of Nimrod and a daughter of Paro, and Avraham's right-hand man is this son of Nimrod, which means essentially the people who pick on Avraham end up losing because their children end up joining Avraham and getting inspired and becoming part of this whole Avraham mission, as it were. But again, I'll say, now when push comes to shove and he wants a little more, maybe he wants to marry into the family, so he's not there. And let's keep another thing in mind. At one point, Eliezer is seen as a potential heir, potential son of Avraham, because that's what Avraham says by I believe the Brit Bein HaBetorim. He says that I don't have any children, I don't have anybody else, the only one I have is this Eliezer, he's the only one who I have who can possibly inherit me. So you realize that he is, at least for a moment, this possibility to be the one who's going to take the heir of Avraham. So then why would it be so far-stretched to say, or far-fetched to say, so maybe his daughter is the one who should marry into the family and become Yitzchak's wife? So I'm just saying that that is a starting point if we're looking for at least one candidate, that may very well be one. But there may be another way of reading this, but what I want to do is I'm going to point something out, which I have pointed out before, but we're going to start with Pasuk Yud Bet, and then we'll move backwards. He says to God, Vayomar, he says, Hashem, Elokei Adoni Avraham, Akrein Elofnai Hayom, do for me a miracle today, Vaasei Chesed Im Adoni Avraham, and do Chesed for Avraham. And then he spells out the particular plan that he wants. He goes, here I am, by the well, and people are going to come and draw water, Vayana Rasha Omari Leha, and the girl who's going to say to me, can I give you some water, and can I give to your camels as well? Then you would have proven, Hochachtel Avdecha li Yitzchak uba edaki asita chesed im Adoni. And you notice the word chesed over here is used a couple of times, and there's most likely a reason for this. Now, what was disturbing about this? Because at face value, this sounds wonderful. God, please help and do chesed for Avraham. Who is deserving of chesed more than Avraham? I can't imagine anybody. But what's the problem is actually what it says right before. Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'yavreich hagmalim. He parks his camels, right? He has them kneel, from the word berech. V'yavreich hagmalim michutz la'ir el be'eramayim la'eit erev. And when does he do this? He does this as the sun is about to set. La'eit zeta shoavot, as people are coming to the water. Which means he says this at night when the sun is about to set, and he says, God, now notice in Pasuk Yud Bet, Hakreina lefanai hayom, do this for me now, which means essentially he's looking at his watch and he's saying, okay, God, you got a good couple seconds to do this. And on top of all of that, the beginning of Pasuk Yud Bet has a wonderful word, Vayomar, but if you look at the squiggly thing on top of the mem, that is a shalshalet, and the shalshalet takes a good couple seconds to say. So it's Vayomar, which means it's a couple seconds before sunset, and he's stuttering along the way over here, spitting out as slowly as possible, essentially giving God essentially no time frame to go ahead and do this, which means one way that I can now read this is, okay, he went there, and he tried, he did his best, and he goes back home to Avram and says, listen, I tried, there was nobody there. Only question is that if that's the way you want to read it or not. Well, and then what it says is, before he got the words out of his mouth, Pasuk Tetvav, V'yihu terem kilala daber, the words didn't even come out of his mouth yet, V'nei Rivka yotzeit, asher yuldah lebetuel ben Milka eshet Nachor. And she is the daughter of Betuel, who's the son of Milka, who is the wife of Nachor, Achi Avraham. And she's got the water, and she offers, and you all know how the story is going to end up. Pasuk Aleph, Ha'ish Mishta'ela Machrish Ladat Hatzliach Hashem Darko Lo. And he's shocked, but did he succeed or not? We're not exactly sure, but the answer is that he wants to know what family she comes from, and so on. So let's pause for a moment. Many things what he did over here, I think, are completely understandable to us. I told you, I have a question. Should we look at this Eved in a cynical way? He's giving God a couple seconds. Or maybe there's a second way that we should look at it. There's a beautiful midrash that tells us we should be reading this in the nicest possible way, because after all, this is Avraham's Eved. We'll take a look and we'll see again the various midrashim and how they afford us the possibilities of reading this in perhaps two different ways. Source number three is Vayomilav Eved Vetein Lo Et Biti. You know, I'm going to give my daughter, and that's the midrash that identifies that he has a daughter. On the other hand, in source number four, which is like right after that's Parsha Nun Tet, and this is Parsha Samach Siman Aleph Vayomar Hashem Elokei Avraham Ekrena Lefnei Hayom. That was the point. No, today, now. So let's just skip a little bit. Right. So there's a little bit of attention in this midrash. Whose word is God listening to? Is God listening to the Eved, or is God listening to Avram, who is also an Eved of God? And it gives us these two different possibilities, but either way, God is responding. Now, I know in the back of your minds, a lot of you are aware that there is a Gemara that says that Eliezer acted inappropriately by behaving like this. The Midrash is not aware of it. And it's not so simple in terms of the Peshat either, because he doesn't right away say that whoever does this, he questions afterwards. It's not automatic. He questions, who are you? But look at Midrash in source number five. This is the one that I think is really the most striking. Amar Rabbi Acha, Yafa sichatan shel avdei batei avot mitoratan shel banim. The idle chatter, and I use the word idle here, or you can, if you prefer, you can just say the chatter, of the servants in the home or the house of, or the tents of the patriarchs is preferable to the Torah of the descendants of the children. Parshatosha Eliezer, Shnaim u'shlosha dapim hu, Omra v'shona. It goes on for a couple of pages and it repeats itself. V'sheretz migufei Torah, v'ein devo mitameh kibsaro elu miribui hamikra. And I'm going to ignore the sherets for a second and just use the example, a different example. There are many things that we are very important to us that are not written in the Torah. How many of the 39 melachot on Shabbat are written black and white in the Torah? There's many things that are really significant to Judaism and are not written black and white. How exactly you do shechita, as I showed you, it's not written clearly in the Torah. There are many, many laws which are part of Jewish life today which are not written clearly. We have halacha Moshe Sinai, we learned it out from all kinds of limudim. But when it comes to the story of Eliezer, there it goes on with incredible detail and it repeats itself. So the conclusion of the Midrash is there is something greater in the words of this Eved than in the Torah itself, which is eventually given to the children. That's what the Midrash said. Now, in order to understand that midrash, you have to clearly understand that it's seeing something very positive over here. And I'll tell you exactly what it's saying. It's reading it the opposite way that I read it. It's saying, look at the emuna that this man has. He's on a mission, not just a mission from God. He's on a mission from Avram Avinu. He is the shliach of Avram Avinu, the emissary. So this is the easiest thing in the world. All that he has to do is go there and go through the motions. And it's not even a question of testing God. Let me put it a little differently. This is the man who has seen so many miracles in Avram's life. By the way, go back to assuming that he is Nimrod's son. He saw this man walk out of a furnace. He sees the wars that took place. He sees the way that God is with him in every single thing that he does. So he gets there and he says, God, okay, listen, we got a couple minutes. Go do it. Do your stuff, God, because this is for Avram. Which means it could be in his own life. He never had that kind of confidence. But this is for Avram. And when you're working for Avram, the miraculous takes place. And therefore, when we look at this midrash, which is telling us, read these words carefully, because when you read these words carefully, you'll realize how much faith and how much we can learn out of the behavior of Eliezer. So it's essentially what it's telling us is that there is something over here incredibly positive. So as I said, you now decide, is Eliezer doing this in order to test God, in order to fail, so he can go back and introduce his daughter to Yitzchak? Okay, because we have our one candidate on the side. Or is he doing this because he's working for Avram? So of course this is going to work. Of course, this is like a no-brainer. Of course it's going to work. So as I said, that I leave to you to determine which way you prefer to read it. Rashi quotes that midrash. Actually, he quotes it it's an interesting place because he quotes it much later, not, I think, where you should have said it. Vavo hayom, when he tells over the story. Hayom yotzati vayom bati mikan shekavtzalo haaretz, which means miracles took place and he got there immediately. No travel time. Amar bi acha yafesi chatan shel avdei avot lefnei makom yitaretzon shobanim. Sherei parsha shel Eliezer kfula b'torah v'harbei gufei Torah. He did what I did. He stayed away from the sheretz. Many important principles of Torah l'biruim misa. We only know about because of various hints. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman also put it very nicely. Haperek haba mar elenu tmuna nifla'a shel Beit Avi Uma. This chapter is a wonderful way of getting a snapshot of the home of the founder of our people. Ketzer afilu avdo nisa al yidei ra'yonot Avram Adonav. And when you're careful and you analyze the language that Eliezer uses, you realize how elevated he is and how he is somebody of a person of great stature and significance. Ketzer motzia lapoel tashlichut shuta alav, how he manifests this mission that he's on, tochne emanut meleya la'adonav, with complete He is completely faithful to his master. V'toch bitachon biltim mugbal b'lokei Avraham, and he has complete trust, unlimited trust, in the God of Abraham. And essentially, that's what we just now saw. And I just think David Tzvi Hoffman put it very nicely. Source number 8 is the Abarbanel. That's your homework. We're not gonna do it. He actually does something really important. Not the only one. Not the first one. And not the last one. But I was once in a shiur from Rav Breuer when I was in yeshiva, and he came week after week, and he was doing this, the same thing, week after week after week, showing more and more depth. Essentially what he does is that he compares what Eliezer says the first time to what he says when he repeats it the second time. Here the Abarbanel finds 10 differences and tells you the significance of each and every one of these differences. So if you want to go through the parsha carefully, you can actually go and take a look and see what it is that he does. But towards the end, he does make note of something which Rashi says, v'imlo tagiduli, which means if you're not willing, gamken v'fnel yamin ol smol. He goes, listen, if you're not willing to center, so then I'll move on. I can go right, I can go left, I can go looking in other places, and I'll find the right person. So let's just pause for a moment before we move on to what he is identifying as the other candidates, and let's just think a second to what he actually did. Because what he did needs to be, again, clearly seen because it's purposeful. The word that he used in the beginning multiple times was the word chesed. And the test that he does is a test of chesed. Essentially, what he is looking for is somebody who is just like Avraham. He's going, traveling back to Avram's hometown, and he's looking for Avraham 2.0 with one huge difference, that Avram was a male and this is a female. But he's looking for somebody who's like Avraham. So just like Avram is a man of chesed, he's looking for a girl who is this girl of chesed, and that's what the entire test is. A number of the commentaries note this, they explain it, they nuance it slightly differently, but that is very clearly what he's trying to do. Now, we're going to use this as, and by the way, a lot of things I've said till now are things which I've said in the past. Now we're going to start going in a different direction. because what we want to understand is exactly, again, what the alternatives were. And that's one of the things that we were just now told. You know, I can go right and I can go left, and we'll see what Rashi and the Midrash do with that right and left. But in the meantime, what the Eved, or Eliezer, if you will, does is very purposeful. But I do want to pause for a moment. If here's a man with so much faith, and he turns and goes, God's going to help me, and God's going to provide. So he is Eliezer. Did you understand that point? Because that's what does the name Eliezer mean? The person that God helps. Eliezer, God helps. Which means even if we never knew that he was Eliezer, he's Eliezer. What makes him Eliezer? Because look, God helped him. So that should be those obvious things. So that's what I'm saying is interesting, is that it went out of its way not to give him his name. And just by watching him behave, that is certainly the way that I'd prefer to read it. I told you, there's another way of reading it, and that's the cynical way, but that's not healthy for us either. We don't need to be cynical. We don't need to read cynical motives into him. And maybe he did have a daughter. And by the way, maybe that's not cynical at all. Maybe he had a daughter. That's what he wanted. And Avram says, no, you go out and you're going to find a girl there. So he says, fine, that's what I'm going to do. And he does it with all his heart and all of his soul, even if it breaks his heart. That's also part of having, you know, total dedication to Avram. This is what Avram told him to do. This is what he's going to do, even though deep in his heart he wishes it was something else. But essentially, the choice over here is this particular girl, and I'll say it again, it is this girl who lives a life of chesed, because that is obviously what's needed. Now let's just look at a couple of commentaries, and we'll see how they, again, how they nuance it. Rashi, you know, this would have proven in source number 10. Well, we can go back a second. Midrash Agadah says almost the same thing. Source 9, Vamra Shata. V'lamamar Eliezer Zeratanai. Why did he choose this? Kinyan Ezeh Shochiach Hashem Leben Adoni. What makes her, therefore, her appropriate? L'fishu Yodea Im Amrekein Hitiet Tzadeket. Because he knows that if someone speaks like that, she's a very righteous woman. V'tia Ohevet L'shameshet Ta'archim. And she's going to then love her task in order to bring the guests in the house. K'shem Shayu Osim Avram V'sara. Which means essentially we need somebody who gets the family, somebody who understands the mores of the family, somebody who appreciates taking care of guests, and that's why specifically this is the test. Rashi writes, Rashi is more specific, that more specific, that she has to be somebody who does chesed, right? So therefore it's almost exactly what we saw in the Midrash. The Malbim, Mitzad Shani Asiti Zot L'Siman Ulchasho Hu HaZivug Shel Yitzchak. This is the sign to show that this is the right girl for Yitzchak. Again, back to the same point. A woman of chesed and a woman who's willing to take in guests. Because that is Avram. Which means really what the Malbim is pointing out, what we understood, is that we're looking for somebody who's very similar to Avram. The Meshechachma Uvame'u Ba'ida Kiyasita Chesed Madoni. Perusho derech emet, and which means he's trying to give you a little bit more of a Kabbalistic understanding. Ki Yitzchak midat gvura. Yitzchak is gvura, which is midat hadin, which is stricter. Umiyahitabkut gvura imachesed nasebriya chatichon emet. And when gvura merges with chesed, it creates emet, truth. This is Kabbalistically the case. Ulechen kasher hergish berivcha midat hachesed, and when he felt that there was chesed there with her, Baruch Hashem Shelo Zav Chesdova Amito. Notice the word Amito. We should have bolded that as well. Because why? Because Emet was just created. Shenolad Midat Emet Behitmas Gut Chesed Ugvura. That now that Rivka was identified and she is going to be the Zivug of Yitzchak, now Emet has come into the world. Vizim Midato Shel Yaakov. Which means the stage was set for Yaakov to come into the world as soon as these two are now going to meet. So as I said, he says this a little bit deeper. The Chtam Sofer in Source 13 also goes in this direction, and he quotes the Rashi, and then he says, anybody who ever needs a Dvar Torah for a wedding, and Ezer Kenegdo. What's an Ezer Kenegdo? Shemi Shahi mitnagedet b'tiv'al tivo shel ba'al al yedei zehi ozro. You don't need two people that are identically the same, but you don't, again, it's not an attack, the other one. It is rather that they merge together and each one brings different qualities into the relationship. Ki lo tovim shneim him vatranim upazranim. It's not good if both of them are exactly the same, and they always give in, or somebody who spends a lot. Vine Avram Shahoya Bimidat Hesed Haya Sara Inehat Sara Ba'orchim, which is very interesting. He quotes the Gemara Bava Metzia that Sara was the one who knew how to say no. Avram couldn't say no. But the marriage of Avram and Sarah, Avram was chesed and Sarah knew how to say no. Yitzchak, she meet the tadin, and Yitzchak, who is Sarah's son, is like his mother. Tov ma'ot she'teh ishto b'midat chesed. Gomer chesedim tovim. And therefore it was necessary to have somebody who would be a very good balance for Yitzchak. So this is also something I've said in the past, but I was very happy to find the Chatam Sofer say this as well. So now, let's just notice one more thing to understand why this choice was so good. And then hopefully we're going to have time to also understand something else, why it may have been problematic. And we still have a lot to do over here. Along the way, when Rivka was introduced, it mentioned the father, Betuel, it mentioned then Milka, and it also mentioned Nachor. So this marriage between Nachor and Milka is something which I want you to appreciate why it's significant. And again, we're going to hold on to it and hopefully have time to come back. Look at source 14. Okay, keep this in mind. One man, Terach, has three children, Avram, Nachor, and Haran. Okay, so now we know who Lot is. Lot is the son of Haran, the grandson of Terach, the nephew of Avram, all very easy. And he's the one who died. According to the Midrash, he's the one who jumps into the furnace and tries to imitate Avram, and it doesn't work out well. That's why, like it says underneath the furnace, do not try this at home, and so on. Right? Be'eretz Moladeto, Be'or Kazdim. V'yikach Avram v'Nachor lehem nashim. And Avram and Nachor both married. Shem eshet Avram Sarai, v'shem eshet Nachor Milka bat Haran. Avi Milka v'avi Yiska. Now, that verse also has too many words in it. So first of all, who's this Milka? Milka is the daughter of Haran, which means she is the sister of Lot. But it also says that there's another sister. V'shem eshet Nachor Milka bat Haran avi Milka v'avi Yiska. According, if you look at Rashi there, you'll find out that Yiska is actually Sarah, which means that we have direct parallels on both sides of the family. We have Avraham marrying a niece, and by the way, that makes Lot not only his nephew, Lot is now also his brother-in-law, which means the descendants of Terach, you have it stacked on one side, on the Avraham side, but you also have it exactly parallel and equal on the other side when Nachor marries Haran's other sister. So essentially, you have Avraham and his brother Nachor, both of them, in a certain sense, taking responsibility for the family of their dead brother, and each one marrying a daughter. Of course, then there's Lot, who's somewhat left out, but this child produced by the Nachor Milka side is somebody who has like a double ancestry leading back to Terach, just like Yitzchak does, which means I'm just trying to show you that there's actually more parallelism here than you would have imagined. We're up to source 14. If you need to see, I put all the way at the bottom over here. Those of you who need to visualize this and to see this, this is all the way at the bottom of the sources, so you could take a look. If for some reason you need it, I will send it to you if you like. But over here, Terach has Avram Haran. It's actually, this is more confusing than anything, but you have Sarah Yiska, right? Milka, Nachor, Milka, and then you have Betuel, and then you have Rivka, and let's not forget Lavan. Lavan's going to be part of the story as well, and Leah and Rachel, which means is that all of this is coming from the Terach side in multiple ways. On the other hand, we have Avraham, and then Sarah, and then Yitzchak was also from multiple ways. Of course, there's somebody else that we need to pay attention to, which perhaps we forgot of. That means that there really was another candidate along the way over here. So who was that candidate? Well, one who you're not going to love so much is Yishmael, but he does come from Terach Avraham Yishmael. Again, it's not the double side, and it doesn't have Sarah, but it's only from one side. But maybe if he has a daughter among all of these kids, maybe there's somebody there to speak of. But there is somebody else. There is another candidate, and not the one you would have chosen, you would have thought of. But I know somebody who has two nice girls, and Lot, and you would not have chosen Lot's daughters right away. I don't know why this is, but you're even laughing at Lot's daughters. But if you notice something that, you know, Avram marries Lot's sister and Nachor marries Lot's sister and, you know, whatever happened to Lot over here, that Lot also maybe should have been a candidate. All of you know that I just said something really silly, but you don't know why it's really silly yet. And that's why we need to work a little bit harder to figure this out. Right. So that. So when I said that, Lode has some daughters, and perhaps they could be, or one of them could be, a good match for Yitzchak. I'm not the first one to make that suggestion. The Midrash, it's after Source 19, it says on the point when the Eved, or shall we call him Eliezer, says, "V'efne el yamin o'al smol, al yamin ze Yishmael, al smol ze Lot," which means he's telling us that there are other options over here, and essentially, while the negotiations are taking place with the family of Rivka, that's what he says. Rashi quotes this in source number 20, Perek Kaf Dalet, Pasuk Mem Tet, "Al Yamin, Benot Yishmael, Al Smol, Benot Lot." So, in order to really understand this, and ultimately why these two were not appropriate, we're going to have to learn something which is a little deeper. And the question is, you know, how to say it, because we can say it in a simpler way and we can say it in a deeper way. So far, what we do know is that the perfect candidate is Rivka, and Rivka is the perfect candidate because she's a woman who performs chesed. She is like Avraham 2.0. Now, let's go back a second. When we think about Yishmael, Yishmael, obviously, he was born to his mother. His mother is Hagar, and to Avram Avinu. But there's something wrong over here. And once we understand the thing which is wrong, we're going to be able to understand the issue. Source 22, Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Dalet, "Vayavo al Hagar," this one, Avram is intimate with Hagar, "Vatahir vatera ki harata, vate kal givir tabe now." And when she realizes that she's pregnant, she starts to look upon Sarah in a different way. She diminishes her. She thinks something special about herself, and she thinks Sarah is not special at all. Rashi, again, based on the Midrash, tells us, "Amra," she said to people, "Sarazu," this woman Sarah, "in sitra kigluya." On the inside, she's not what she looks on the outside. "Mara atzma ki ilohit tzedeket." On the outside, she looks like she's a righteous woman. But she's not. And what's her proof? Fertility. All the years that she was with Avram, she didn't become pregnant. And she's saying, "I was with Avram one night, and I became pregnant." So obviously she's using her fertility as an argument to say that she is far greater than Sarah. Now, we all understand that that's not the strongest argument, but I do want to understand what it is that she's saying. There's a concept, and I want to say it now in the Kabbalistic way. The concept is called a klipa. Now, the way that I would translate that is it's a covering, but it's much more than that. A klipa is something which is a counterfeit. It's something which is hiding the essence of something. And if you get attracted to the covering instead of the essence, then you get incredibly confused. You know, if I think about a fruit, I think about an orange. Outside of an orange, it looks very nice. It looks orange. Somebody very carefully took off the cover of an orange. You can have a hollow cover. It looks like an orange, but you take a look at it, it's empty. On the other hand, the fruit itself of the orange is something which tastes delicious. But you can't confuse the klipa, the covering, with the fruit itself. But if you keep that in mind, that's exactly what took place over here. Is Hagar accused Sarah of being a klipa? On the outside, she looks one way, but the inside, that's not really there. It's empty. And we have a principle called haposel b'mumoposel. Whoever attacks somebody, they often or always attack them based upon their own shortcomings. Which means if anything, if anyone represents a klipa over here, it's going to be Hagar and not Sarah. We see something interesting because we see similar type of behavior with Yishmael himself. We're told that, and this is source 24, Perek of Aleph, Pasuk Tet, "Vatera Sarid ben Hagar mitzrira she'odel Avram mitzachek." She sees that he's laughing. Now, one thing about Yitzchak is, before he's born, when he's born, everyone speaks about laughter. But over here, this kind of laughter, there was something wrong with it. Rashi gives a number of opinions. One of them is davar acha lashon gilui arayot, that over here there is an implication of sexual promiscuity. So the Midrash fills in some of the information, and it tells us that Yishmael was attracted to the klipa of Avram, and let me try to explain that in English. Avram represented chesed, kindness, sweetness, giving. Yishmael manipulated chesed for his own selfish needs, and that's ironic because chesed is supposed to be the most unselfish behavior. Midrash continues and says that Yishmael would go around to people, women, and he would hunt them, as it were, and he would say to them, especially followers of his father, say to them, don't you think you should do chesed for me? And that was his pickup line, which means he tried to argue that there should be no boundaries. He tried to argue for free love. He tried to argue that people should be intimate with him because that would be an act of chesed. But that's a confusion of chesed. And this is particularly interesting because the word chesed is actually used in the context of the Chumash to describe sexual sins. In Vayikra, specifically, when it's speaking about the sin of incest between a brother and a sister, Perikav Pasuk Yud Zayin, it says, "V'isha sheyikachet achoto bat aviv o bat imo v'rat ervata v'hitirat ervato chesed hu." It says when a brother and a sister are intimate. Now, if a brother and a sister love each other in a nice way, in a healthy way, in a fraternal way, there's something very nice about that. But when it comes in a sexual way, it means that boundaries were broken. But what's fascinating is that this is called chesed. This kind of chesed is chesed without any checks or balances. It's a chesed without any kind of controls. It is a klipa of the real type of chesed. Now, what's interesting is we go back to Yishmael, this term tzchok, which means, yes, Yitzchok was supposed to bring laughter in the world, but a respectful laughter, a happy laughter, a laughter which brings godliness into it. The word tzchok is used various times in the Torah to connote a type of sexual sin. Later on, we're going to find that Avimelech is watching through the window and he sees Yitzchok together with his wife. And there it says, Mitzachek et Rivka. And that has a sexual implication to it. Later on, when Eshet Potiphar is going to accuse Yosef of rape, she's going to say, Ish Ivri came, Re'u Ivi Lanu Ish Ivri Litzachek Banu. And again, that's the same negative type of laughter or tzchok. We find it further by the sin of the golden calf, that the people kamu litzachek, all of those types of laughter, or all negative type of laughter. We actually find another, it doesn't use the word laughter, but it implies it, and again it comes back to Yishmael. We're told, and this is already by next week's parsha, we're told that the Torah stresses that the father of Yitzchak is Avraham. But it repeats it. It's and it seems a little bit superfluous. It doesn't seem to make that much sense that it should be said more than once. So what Rashi there states, we're talking about source 26, Avram Aliti Yitzchak, Perek Kafei Pasuk Yotet, Ayadesh Katava Katuv, Yitzchak Ben Avram. It already said Yitzchak is the son of Avram. Huskak Lomer Avram Aliti Yitzchak, did it still have to say that Avram fathered Yitzchak? Lefisha Hayu Leit Sonei Hador, the stand-up comics, the people who, the Leit Sonei, the clowns of the generation, the jokers of the generation, they said, Ma'avi Melech Nadabra Sara, that who's really the father of Yitzchak, it's really Avimelech. Which means that was the laughter, that was the tzchok, which means Yishmael would use inappropriate language to talk about his own father and say, oh, Avram didn't father Yitzchak. But that, again, that was in his own interest to say such a thing, or perhaps it could be he overstated this. If he was making fun of Avram because Avram was too old to have a child, so the 99-year-old Avram was too old, but the 86-year-old Avram wasn't too old, then that's something worthwhile thinking about. Nonetheless, what is it exactly that Yishmael is doing? His mind is in the gutter. and he uses chesed as a ploy, which means this is a klipa. He is a klipa. If you look at Source 27, a book which we love the name of, the Megala Amukos, or the Megala Amukot, over here he says, Da klipa Yishmael mi yamin, which really goes back, I'll go yamin or I'll go smol, because this is the klipa of Yishmael, and he explains a bit, which we're not going to go into right now, the Sifte Kohen in Source 28, and this is his commentary to Vayikra writes, V'dosha elu shteya klipot him klipat paras v'yishmael, hapnimiti shel Yishmael shehaznut mitzuya b'hem yoter misharamot. And again he says, this is this idea of sexual sins are there by Yishmael, which are connected to him being a klipa of Avram, a klipa of chesed. It is the veneer of chesed. You can try to convince yourself that it's chesed, but it's not. So we realize there's something in common now between Hagar and Ishmael, which should be of no surprise whatsoever. Also, we keep in mind that they themselves, they come from Egypt, which means that is where she comes from. And this is the family of Ham. Many of the sexual sins, or I would say even almost all of the sexual sins that we find in Bereshit, well, maybe not all, many of the sexual sins we find in Bereshit go back to the family of Ham. So therefore, there's a bit of Ham over there in Hagar. There's a bit of Ham over there in Yishmael as well. And therefore, as much as they want to imagine that this is the following the teachings of Avraham, we find that both of them have a lack of appreciation, which means when it comes to Hagar, she rejects Sarah as being somebody of significance, and she demeans Sarah because she wants to really try to take her place. We find then Yishmael, again, demeaning Yitzchak and Sarah by claiming that there is no paternity on Avraham's side, but rather, you know, he's one of the jokers of the generation, and claiming, oh, you remember that night that she spent with Avimelech? That must be where Yitzchak comes from. Which means over here we're dealing with people who are crass and coarse, and these are the people that are really represent not chesed, but a klipa. And that's why ultimately they're going to be pretenders. Which leads us back now to the other candidate. Another candidate should be the daughters of Lot. So if we think about the daughters of Lot, and I know the obvious reason that you're going to use and that you're going to pick in order to reject them is because of the sexual sins that they do, and that's not what I'm thinking. We'll get there, but in a way which may be a little bit surprising. I'm going to just think a little bit about what they did, but more importantly, why they did it. I mean, it's very important to realize that actions, especially sins, and I'm willing to entertain the possibility that we're not necessarily dealing with sin over here, but actions, especially sins, generally have a background to them. There's a reason, there's a cause, there's something which happened beforehand which causes this to take place. And now the question is, so what exactly happened over here? And we hear their words, and this is in Source 32, Perek Yotet, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Etomar Bechira Latzira. The older daughter said to the younger daughter, Avinu Zaken, our father is old, and there's no man left to have relations with us. So as far as they were concerned, they were saving the world. And which I'm going to say again is a debatable point whether if they were right or wrong. They're saving humanity. They're saving the world. Maybe they see themselves as a throwback to the very dawn of history, where one can then wonder who exactly did Cain or Hevel have relations with. And there is a tradition that they had with their sisters. And again, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The world is created by Chesed, but that's a type of a Chesed, which is quite interesting, because there's an instance wherein a brother and a sister are allowed to be with one another, because, and that's the way the world is created. Over here, on the other hand, there's something fundamentally wrong with their analysis. And until we notice this, we don't understand what's really going on. They think there's no one else left in the world. Well, there really should have been someone else. And that person is Avraham. Which means, if we really understand what's going on over there, what is the reason that Lot and his family were saved? They're saved because of Avram. They're saved because of the merit of Avram. Now, why don't these girls know this? Which means, apparently, the narrative in Lot's house, when he talks about family, he doesn't talk about Avram Avinu. Because if they would have known who Avram was, they would understand Avram was not killed when Sodom is destroyed. Avram is not the collateral damage when Sodom is destroyed. It doesn't make any sense that Lot is going to be the only person to survive. Lot can survive Sodom, but Lot is not going to survive and Avram be taken by the destruction of Sodom. That just doesn't make any sense. The only way you can get to that understanding is if you don't understand who Avram is. And that seems to be the big problem over here. They don't know who Avram is, which means the real chesed, the bona fide chesed, the chesed of Avraham is foreign to them, which means over here we have the same kind of phenomenon which we saw with Hagar and with Ishmael. They don't understand the real chesed, and then instead a klipa replaces it. Over here, their lack of understanding that Avraham's real chesed, and therefore Avram is still alive, and therefore Avram is the opposite of Sdom. And if Sdom is wiped out, then Avram, of course, is going to survive. Avram is not the one who will be taken down with Sdom, which means if they understood all of this, they would have understood what real chesed is, but instead they end up identifying with that counterfeit again, which means their type of chesed is a sexual outrage. Why? Because they don't understand what real chesed is. And then we realize that the pretenders, the klipa, the counterfeit, all are pushed aside. It's not going to be from the family of Ishmael. It's not going to be from the family of Lot. It goes back to this other family, and this is the family where Rivka comes from. Although that's not uncomplicated, because, and this is, again, foreshadowing to things we're going to need to deal with, she's got a brother, and the brother's name is Lavan, and he's not going to be a very simple adversary. You know, it's interesting if you go back when Eliezer first meets Lavan and you listen to the conversation taking place, Lavan does something which is fascinating, and it shows you what kind of a manipulator he is. He mirrors him. The same words which are used by Eliezer, he mimics him. He says Baruch Hashem, he says Baruch Hashem. You know, right there we can stop. Is he really a person who believes in God? I mean, later on, we're going to find about the idols that he has. We're going to find him swearing by the god of Nahor. We're not exactly going to see a person who has great religious monotheistic faith. But now he does. And why? Because his interest is piqued. And he may also be afraid. And in order to understand that, we need to, I think, finally pay attention to something else which was going on. The Sarah-Avram relationship is paralleled by the Milcah-Nahor relationship. Both Avram and Nahor were brothers, marry the daughter of their other brother who has passed away, and that is Milcah and Sarah, or Yiscah. So both of them have double claims to the Terech family, but now I want to think in Lavan's world. For Lavan, there's one thing which is always important to him, and that's money. Which means, I've said this a number of times, who is the one guy in Tanakh you would never buy a used car from? That's Lavan. You buy a used car from him at night, and it's one car. You wake up in the morning, it's a different car. You settle on a price, he's going to change the price on you 10 different times. You can't deal with a person like Lavan, because Lavan is not a trustworthy person. Now just think for a second. And by the way, this all came clear to me when I was thinking about something in my own family. My mother's family, my mother's mother and my mother's grandmother and grandfather, they ended up coming out of Russia and they came to America. My grandmother had an older sister who was already married at the time who stayed behind. And that's it. They stayed behind in what later became the Soviet Union. And they were stuck behind the Iron Curtain. When my great-grandmother passed away, she said to her children, if my daughter or her family ever gets out, then part of the will should be for them as well. Meanwhile, it was impossible to include them in any way. It was, but if they ever come out? So, of course, as fate would have it, one day my family gets a phone call from someone who claims that he's a cousin. He said his name is Igor. He says he's from the Soviet Union. He says that his grandmother told him that he has relatives in America. And he didn't necessarily know anything about the will. But that didn't stop my cousins, my mother's cousins, from calling, who is this Igor? What is he doing? He doesn't look like our family. Where did he come from? Is he looking for money? Of course, most of that was said in jest, and they welcomed and embraced their cousin when he came. But I think about Lavan. I think that may have been more of a concern. Some guy shows up with all kinds of wealth, and he says, oh, I come from Avram's family. If you can channel your inner Lavan, you'd be very suspicious. It's a setup. It's a ploy. It's like somebody saying that he's a prince from Nigeria and he's here to give you all of his money. He comes with money, and Lovin's convinced he's going to try to get money out of him. And he's watching and he's listening, and he's also worried that the Avraham Sarah side of the family is coming back to try to collect their part of the will. Because Avram and Sarah left. Nachar and his family stayed behind. But they're completely parallel in terms of their claims that they can stake. And if we know Lavan, he's worried. He's worried that someone's going to take what's his. And of course, the way that this chapter of the story ends is that Eliezer leaves all of these things, leaves all of his gifts, which, by the way, doesn't stop Lavan from trying to convince Rivka, okay, we got the money, you don't have to go now, you'll go later. But she does something else, which is, of course, remarkable. She goes with this man. And it really is remarkable. And we need to understand it. What she is doing is essentially what Avram did. She is Avram 2.0. Avram picks up, leaves his house, leaves his birthplace, leaves his family, and goes to destinations unknown because he understood this is the will of God. He heard God say this term. She, in a sense, is even greater because she doesn't hear God say it, but she senses it nonetheless that this is what she needs to do. This is the trip that she needs to take. She also is going to leave her house and leave everything. And why? Because of this man that she met. And who is this man? Well, this man is going to take her to Avram Avinu, which means he has so much faith. And now we go back to the discussion about all the words in this chapter. He has so much faith. He has so much faith because he has been with Avram for so long. And with Avram, the impossible is possible. With Avram, the improbable is absolutely likely. With Avraham, the world is micromanaged by God, and she sees this, and she realizes that she wants to walk away from her family, from her side of the family, and she wants to join the Avraham, the Yitzchak family, because she realizes this is where she needs to be, which means this woman who performs chesed knows this is where she needs to be. She's not like her brother, although she's quite clever, and that's one of the things that we'll see as we move on. There is a cleverness to her. She does understand things on a deeper way. Nonetheless, the fundamental decision that she makes is that she wants a life of chesed, and this is real chesed. This is wanting to become part of something bigger, and therefore this is just following exactly the same footsteps, taking the same path, following the same road that Avram had taken all those years before. Avram did it by walking out of a furnace, and maybe the person who was right with him watching this was this young man Eliezer, who was the son of Nimrod. Now all these years later, she's going to follow the same footsteps that Avram took when he went with Eliezer when he left his birthplace. And now she's going to go in the same direction and follow and rejoin the other part of the family. She's going to come back. And it's not that Avram is interested in the money which Lavan may have. She's interested in the spirituality that Avram has. Later on, I don't want to ruin the story for you, but later on, Yaakov is going to come, and Yaakov is going to come with nothing, and Lavan's going to look, what's going on? What kind of setup was this? There's no money. Where's all the money? And at the end of the day, Yaakov is going to end up walking away with all of the money of Lavan. He's going to take the money which was brought by... He's going to take the money which Terach left, he's going to take the money of Nachar, and he's going to take the money which Avram sent as part of the dowry to bring to arrange the marriage between Rivka and Yitzchak. All the things that were brought by Eliezer, Yaakov's going to walk off with everything and bring it all back home to Israel. But that's a whole other part of the story. In the meantime, Lavan, follow the money. That's what concerns him. But when it comes to Rivka, that's not what concerns her. What concerns her is a life of chesed, is a life which is elevated, is a life of spirituality. And just like Avram left, she's going to start her journey, and she's going to go and join Yitzchak and create something which is true, create Emet. She's going to create something which is incredibly spiritual, because she understands there's more to money in life, there's holiness, there's spirituality, and she wants to go and meet her destiny.